Hello, I'm here.
Good afternoon, Diane. Just in time.
Really?
Well,
I think I'm late.
Yeah, it's just perfect.
Okay, do you want me to call the meeting to order?
Yes, please.
All right, this is the June 7th, 2022 meeting of the Des Moines Waterworks Planning Committee. And I think we're going to talk about the five-year CIP. So go ahead, Ted. And I apologize for being late. I was at the skate park with 2 8-year-olds, and one of them decided to go down into that big hole.
Ooh.
And he couldn't get out.
Oh. Well, as long as you didn't get hurt.
Everybody's safe and sound.
Very good. Well, our agenda item today, as you mentioned, is the five-year CIP. We're going to hear from both Mike McKernan and Amy Kaler, but I want to point out that this five-year CIP is a big job every year, and there are a lot of players both in engineering and finance and probably to some degree in distribution and production. A lot of people involved in the process. This is something that we started doing a multi-year CIP back in 2015. The first was a 3-year, and then we transitioned to 5 years, and then we transitioned even further to not including the current year in our 5-year CIP. So this is a nice long look out in the future, and some interesting changes in this year's CIP, primarily because of the work that we've done to price out some options at Sailorville. But I'm going to let Mike get into that in more detail. And so I think at this point, I'll just hand it off to Mike to walk us through. Michael?
Very good, Ted. I just want to make sure we're seeing the front page of a wonderful PowerPoint presentation here.
It's looking good.
All right.
Yes, I see it.
Okay. Diane, along the way here, if you got questions, please just jump in. We got a kind of a small audience today, so don't be bashful. This is kind of where we're headed today. We'll talk about the background of the whole process here, and the list of projects and how we slot them. Then we'll kind of focus in on the next five-year CIP, some of the themes and details there. And then there'll be an important lateral to Amy to talk about the financial elements associated with this plan and how we might be able to fund it. So the background here, just as Ted mentioned, you know, we started back in 2015, kind of started with a 3-year plan, and then we started with 5-year plans, and then we had a budget year as part of the 5-year window. And then we are now, we've been here for 3 or 4 years of just, we're looking at the next 5 years. And we're leaving our budget year out of that. This CIP that lays out the next 5 years, you know, in red is really the quick snapshot here. There's $362 million in spending, and there's a breakdown, and we'll get into those details a little bit later, but we intend to use rates and some debt and some regional monies to fund this. I think that'll be important to understand this year with this presentation. Real quick, that 362, if I took you back 1 year to the most previous discussion on five-year CIP, you would see a number that's $100 million less. And that difference is really explained by more informed pricing at Sailorville, as well as some additional work we want to do with the Fluor filter plant. Those two variables alone account for the difference. So heads up on that. Here at the Waterworks, there's a long history of some great study involving water resources, treatment plants, distribution systems, specific water quality concerns that we've run into over the years. So there's a long list of some planning and long range type documents. Most recently in 2017, and I'm sure you may be growing tired of seeing this image, but this is an important image for all of us to be aware of in regard to how we're moving forward with some of our largest, most important capital investments to the broad Des Moines system here. So this effort by HDR in 2017 looked at source, treatment, transmission, and distribution, you know, really looking out to the year 2040. That was a substantial effort, and that document continues to help inform and guide us. We don't follow it blindly, but we certainly are taking advantage of the investment we put into that report. And again, that report, just pretty broad and an amazing effort. I tip my hat to those that were specifically involved, and it's very comprehensive and thorough. You can see some of the details there. One of the things it does, it talks about when we should do expansions and when we should add ASRs. It was heavily focused on, you know, trying to define, you know, what our production gaps are and, you know, when do we need to add ASRs and, again, other treatment plant expansions. So that was done in 2017. And then in quarter one of 2021, we reached back out to HDR to kind of do an update, you know, garner 5 more years of operational data and look back at that long-range plan and ask ourselves an important question. Can we relax based upon 5 more years of data, capacity or production consumption data, can we relax maybe the timeline for some of these key projects? And the output there was no, the timelines cannot be relaxed. And we are effectively, you know, kind of a bit behind, and we need to lean into catching up. So that was a message in 2021. And that message in 2021 prompted us in the latter half of 2021 to, we ultimately reached out to HDR and Black & Veatch through an RFP process, but we asked that consulting team to provide us with 2 important numbers. And so we wanted them to do preliminary engineering on a 10 MGD expansion at Sailorville. And we wanted them to detail what the probable cost would be to build a 10 MGD expansion. We also asked them to do the same thing with a 25 million gallon per day expansion at Sailorville. So their work is all but complete. It's certainly been mature enough that we can talk about the costs, and we've spoken about the costs with the board and with numerous wholesale regional customers to inform them of these opinions of probable cost. And again, these numbers are significantly higher than what we had in previous CIPs. So there's a little bit of an alarm with that, but we're also considering ourselves far more informed. We are comfortable with these numbers. They've been vetted thoroughly through a strong process that HDR and Black & Veatch use. So just a couple other things about these expansion numbers that I want all to be aware of is that we did elect to change the design basis of each of these expansions. We wanted the plants to be able to treat water with hardness as high as 400 and a water temperature as low as 40 degrees Fahrenheit. This is more reflective of the true raw water conditions at the Sailorville plant after a decade of operation and observation. We think this is a more appropriate design basis. So that change in design basis has certainly driven a change in the cost estimates, but it's also, other variables include just the whole change in the bidding market over the last 2.5-3 years with pandemic and other issues impacting construction. So for the 10 MG expansion, which is the number to the top, you'll see a number just shy of 160 million. There's a 159 million in there that will deal with source treatment and transmission associated with expanding Sailorville from 10 to 20. So enough on those expansions. Another thing that's happened this year that has had an impact on the CIP is a study of our fluid drive filter plant. We took a detailed look at the filter plant with some excellent help from a consulting firm called CDM. And they're not completely finished either, but they have conducted enough of their work that we feel comfortable that there's a number of recommendations that they are identifying. And we feel strongly enough about those that we have placed those in the CIP as well. So about a $10 million or $12 million add to the plan basically for the filter plant enhancements. So I barge into this discussion, and I oftentimes blaze past some things that are very important to, I've been talking about all the engineering related projects, but there are capital needs that are far broader than the long range plan and the engineering department. You know, distribution, production, IT, and customer service are all departments that have their own needs for capital improvement. It could be a special piece of instrumentation in a laboratory, could be some process equipment we want to add to a plant. Technology, either software or hardware, could have impacts on our capital spending. Keep those products current. And then just in, investing in the real true core elements of the system, getting out in the distribution system and making reinvestments there with the equipment they need to, conduct their duties. And so the other thing I want to communicate here is there's a list, it's probably like 200 items long or maybe even longer than that. But we would say these are all eligible products for or projects for consideration in the CIP. And some of them we know are clearly further out in the future, but we just go through this long list of projects and we just try and slot them, within the 5-year window, what we think we should do, and what can we do to, fund the things that we think we really need to do. So that's really the effort, is trying to lay these projects across the 5-year window and, end up creating some numbers on the bottom line. So, if I brought Maury White out of retirement, he would just communicate to us via headline that, the roster is really pretty much the same. We've got one additional player in the form of this filter plant rehab, but the other elements of our CIP, the key themes, the key things that we want to do, the strategic points are really the same from last year to this year. And I just want to highlight those. We are going to continue to defer some DBP, disinfection byproduct, and nitrate projects. We're going to do that purposefully because we want to continue to pursue and embrace the Des Moines River alluvial source water. We really want to find some source water in the Des Moines River alluvial that will benefit the Fluor plant. That's a theme that we've heard in the last several CIPs. We will continue to do that. And pursuing that allows us to defer those other projects. I mentioned the filter plant rehabilitation. That will be an add to the CIP this year. But again, we think it's a very important one. From the capacity perspective, the message is once again the same. We're going to embrace ASR. We are learning that other members of the Metro are pursuing ASRs as well, which is a good thing. It does highlight the need for us to, coordinate and maybe time these things as best we can. But be aware, there's active ASR efforts in Waukee and Ankeny, and West Des Moines is very close to considering the design of an ASR in or near their system. So great news out there in that regard. We will continue to embrace one ASR in our 5-year CIP. And then that the expansion of Sailorville has been in our previous CIP, but this year we clearly come to the table with a more informed sense of what the true cost might be up there. And as mentioned before, those are near $160 million to pull that off. The last thing in here that is, again, it's a theme that we've had before. We've put a little extra emphasis on it, and that's our water main replacement in the Des Moines system. We need to be aggressive with that reinvestment so that by the year 2040, we've got, approximately 20 main breaks per 100 miles of distribution system. So that's kind of a metric that we want to drive and control by investing at the right levels. This would be the fire alarm slide for me, and this is, happens to be my last one, but this to me in black and white with a little bit of red, I guess, really conveys what's in this CIP. So on the upper third of the page, you can see the the capital needs of customer service, IT, distribution, and production. If you sum their five-year window, you come up with something just shy of $29 million. And then on the engineering side, kind of in the middle third there, you see how an additional $333 million is allocated between, you know, capacity, raw water, transmission, water quality, and other categories of reinvestment. So if you couple the 333 and the near 29, you get that $362 million number. And then on the bottom third of the page is a place to perfectly lateral to Amy here. That $362 million is divided between funding by rates, funds from others, our own debt, and then some regional participation. So this is one sheet that I would encourage all board members to be aware of. So with that, Amy, I think I will stop sharing and allow you to move forward.
Okay, I have a question as you do this, and I know, and maybe you're going to talk about this later, but I know we're not regionalized. But if we do regionalize, what does that mean for looking at other assets? And I mean, the one I think of is, you know, West Des Moines did some looking at a plant, and so has Urbandale. How do those fold into the planning?
At this point, I might need a little help from Ted here, but, you know, we are, those assets that are currently owned by others, those are potential assets that would transfer to the regional entity. So we as a utility are not planning around those at the present time, is how I would answer that. But Ted, what would you offer there?
Yeah, I guess I would offer that, you know, this is the Des Moines Waterworks capital improvement or five-year CIP. And part of the challenge for us right now, Diane, is we're kind of teetering on the edge of regional governance is, you know, we need to have a five-year, a plan that works whether we regionalize or not. And I would say that if we, this is such a plan.
Mm-hmm.
If we enter into a regional governance scenario with the other communities, then we've got identified funding that would come from that regional entity. And if we don't, then those funds, those same funds, it would be our expectation that those funds would come from purchase capacity. You know, they would come from other communities who would buy into the facility. And so those other facilities that you mentioned, a plant in Urbandale or a plant in West Des Moines are outside the scope of this, but they would certainly be part of a larger regional CIP, but that is not what this is.
No, I understand that. I just, you know, and I understand this is a transition issue.
Right.
But it looks like we're making progress, and I don't want to go down one path if there's another path that maybe makes more sense, and that at what point do we start blending that? And I think you, and I know Ted, that you have been communicating or planning to communicate with the other entities about where we are on this. So I'm just wondering at what point we make this planning process broader. So if, you know, understanding that this can be really expensive, and if we have some other options, we ought to be looking at them.
Right. Well, I think that from a capacity expansion perspective, we have broad agreement across the region, across the metro, that expanding Sailorville treatment plant by 10 MGD is the best first step for the region. And it's the best first step regardless of whether we are a regional entity or we are not.
Okay. Perfect.
We met this week. Yeah. In fact, Amy and I and Kyle met today, actually, to review some work that Amy has done. We intend this week to send a letter to all of the suburban wholesale customers and foreshadow for them how we would intend to allocate capacity from that 10 MGD expansion, what the cost of that would be and what their responsibility would be under the regional model, and try to get some feedback from them indicating, yeah, we understand that, we support that. We are in a position to move forward based on those assumptions so that we can make a decision about whether we want to begin the design process for that expansion.
Yeah. Well, I think you answered my question, which was regardless of regionalization, this is the first step that needs to be taken place. I mean, we will for a little while have a foot in both camps. So I think that it sounds like you've been doing it both ways, and this is the no regrets path for work.
We're trying pretty hard, Diane, here to establish a path that works either way.
Yep.
I think Amy described it as a foot in two boats earlier when we talked about it, which is a lot more alarming than a foot on both paths. But yes.
Yeah.
Here, and at some point here in the not too distant future, we're going to have to decide which boat we jump in.
Yeah.
But right now, we think that the 10 MGD expansion at Sailorville is the right next step regardless. And that gives me some comfort. Mm-hmm. But I think the important point, another important point to what you asked, is that there are going to be more expenses right on the heels of this expansion. We're going to have to do another expansion, and we're going to have to start that probably in the next 5-year window for sure. And at some point, we got to get all of that on the table and all of that into the regional capital improvements plan, but that's kind of outside the scope of what we've
got here. Okay. Thank you.
Welcome.
That whole discussion was a fantastic segue, I think, into the funding. And Diane, we'll talk a little bit more also about a few impacts regionalization could have on our funding program too of the CIP in a couple slides here. But so we're starting with the $362 million CIP that Mike spoke about and provided some detail. So in order to ensure that we can fund this, we did some pretty solid analysis this year. We ran all the numbers through several iterations through our cost of service model, just to see the impact that it would have to rates, how much debt can we assume. And so, as I mentioned, there's been some solid work by Donna Heckman on the finance team to ensure that this is realistic. And we're really relying on a three-pronged approach here. Regional participation, as Mike mentioned, water revenue, and then also debt. Debt plays a supporting role in our funding. So let's start with regional participation, which is really what we were talking about. As Mike mentioned, that 10 MGD expansion is about $159 million. And regardless of which boat sets sail or which canoe sets sail, we believe that that will be paid for through regional participation, whether we're status quo or through Central Iowa Water Works. So, and Ted alluded to this, we had a meeting, I think it was a couple weeks ago, with where we invited all of our regional partners in and our HDR and Black & Veatch engineering team really presented some important design parameters that were important to understanding the cost of the expansions that we contemplated, which was the 10 MGD and the 25 MGD. Almost every community was represented, and we heard the engineers and our own staff recommend a path forward about the 10 MGD. So those in attendance seemed, as Mike said, supportive, receptive to this notion that we would be expanding our Sailorville plant 10 MGD. But there was curiosity in how that capacity would be allocated and funded. So as Ted mentioned, we're currently working on communicating with the region how the 10 MGD might be allocated and funded. And what we've proposed is using the approach that's outlined in the Central Iowa Water Works draft 2080. Although it's not final, we feel like there is enough support for that allocation. It was in the outcomes document, and it's pretty broadly supported. So we're proposing to follow the formula outlined in that 28E using the 9%, 91%. And for those who aren't familiar with that, That means that 9% of the cost would be allocated based on a proportionate capacity that each community has in Central Iowa Water Works or in regional capacity. And 91% would be based on projected growth. So the communities who are projecting more growth would pay more of the expansion costs. So when we run the cost through that calculation under the CIWW model, Central Iowa Water Works model, Des Moines Water Works would be responsible for about $18 million of that expansion, which if you divide it, if we assume an SRF loan over 20 years at 2% interest, which is what SRF is, our annual debt service is just over $1 million a year for that expansion. And so we put, excuse me, we put this assumed debt service of Des Moines Water Works proportionate share, as I mentioned, in our cost of service model and our allocations. The CIP also includes another $13.6 million in additional joint projects. And most budget years and in most CIPs, we have these joint projects. As I look at this CIP, most of them are booster stations, pump station improvements, those sorts of things, mostly remote facilities that other communities participate in. And so we're receiving some funding from outside of our own walls. And that again totals $13.6 million in this CIP. If we look at the second lever, which is frankly our primary funding lever, water revenue at 35% of the CIP is what we're assuming or what we've modeled water revenue would support. So we've assumed $25 million a year in capital needs that water revenue would provide the funding for. So over that five-year period, it is about $125 million. And, you know, Ted asked a good question yesterday when we were presenting this to him. And, you know, he said, why isn't the $25 million increasing each year? And the reason for that is we could have increased it, but we also had to, in our modeling, recognize that our operations budget, our maintenance budget is also increasing. We're assuming at 5% a year, which these days, frankly, might be a little low. And so we knew we had a target that we wanted to bring rates in. And if we put more funding in this water revenue lever, then our water rate increases are obviously going to be higher. So we really tried to balance that. And I'll talk a little bit more about the rate impact here on the next slide. The third and final lever is debt. We've traditionally, as you know, been pretty conservative in issuing debt. We've preferred a pay-as-you-go approach, which really works for smaller run and maintain projects, but not for significant projects. And so today, just as a reminder, we're virtually debt-free. I can't say we are debt-free because we have $150,000 payment that we'll make this year as our final payment to an SRF loan that we took out in 2003, I think. But as I mentioned, debt is really playing a supporting role in the CIP. We wouldn't be able to meet our needs that we've outlined without this debt, without increasing rates to customers significantly. So we've assumed that we would issue about $13.7 million a year over the 5 years. The cumulative debt load by that final year in 2027 would be just under $85 million. And at that highest level of debt service, our annual debt service would be $5.3 million, which again is within our debt capacity. And we can say that because we have paid off most of our debt. So we are in a good position to be assuming additional debt in the future. So I feel really good about that. Debt does indeed increase costs, and we often have to remind ourselves this is not forgivable loans. This is not grants. So every dollar that we borrow, you have to pay back, and it costs a little bit more. Although SRF still has very favorable rates. They're still at 2%. I haven't heard that they're increasing those even with the adjustments in the market, but we'll have to carefully monitor that because increasing rates obviously has a big impact on overall project costs. The other thing about debt that's important to keep in mind is that debt can create intergenerational equity, which means that if a project that we construct today significantly boost the productivity of the system long term, then debt can actually match the costs and the rates and the recovery of those costs with the benefit that those facilities are providing, meaning future generations of customers are paying for those improvements, and they're also receiving the benefit of those improvements, as opposed to creating a situation where our current customers are paying for all of the improvements that will benefit future generations. So there is that advantage, I believe, of debt, as long as the debt is manageable and we don't get too carried away with that.
Amy, I had a quick question, something you said that I didn't understand.
Yeah.
And that was the regional participation and allocation. Is that, you're saying even if we don't go with the with regionalization, that we still think that allocation would take place under that model? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm not sure that we would use that same calculation if CIWW doesn't progress. But what I do feel pretty strongly in is that we would still have regional participation, meaning we would still sell purchase capacity like we've done in the past.
Sure.
Okay. So we have assumed in this model, you know, again, you've got one leg in and you're staring at a fork in the road. It's difficult to not mesh these two scenarios. And the good news is I do believe we're on a good path for CIWW. So assuming it does come to fruition, we believe that's an allocation that would be outlined in the 2080 would be how we would want to move forward. But I think we'd want to make sure that we have, we want to feel confident that there's support in the fact that we will regionalize. But I want to be clear, even if we don't, I believe that we would sell the purchase capacity. And so that's why we labeled it regional participation.
Okay, thanks.
So when we look at all of those levers or those three legs of our funding program, and we run that through our cost of service model, it results in a 5 to 10% increase in water rates year over year in that 5-year period. Which we believe is reasonable given all of the needs that we have. You know, we could introduce more projects that's going to just increase rates more. We could minimize debt and put more into the rate revenue that will, again, have an impact on rates. And so we really created this into something that we thought was manageable and sustainable for our rates. Because one of the challenges that is becoming increasingly relevant, and we talked a little bit about it a couple months ago in finance and audit, is the conversation that the industry is having related to affordability. And that is becoming so important to make sure that everyone has access to clean and safe water. And so the challenge of the CIP, you know, it's really not hard to identify the needs. We've got a lot of needs, and as everyone else in the world, needs always outpace the resources. But what can be difficult and feel like you're choosing one child over the next is prioritizing those needs. And so we just really need to balance all of that with affordability considerations and make sure that we don't get out over our skis too much on the water rate impact. And again, what we've presented here results in, I feel like, would be a pretty manageable rate increase range of about 5 to 10% each year. Well, let's go back a little bit to regionalization and a couple things that we haven't talked about yet related to regionalization. You know, like many accountants, I have presented kind of the gloomiest picture, the most conservative picture, but I do believe that Central Iowa Water Works is on the horizon, and I'm cautiously optimistic. And so I wanted to also remind you of a couple positive impacts that regionalization would have that has not been included in this funding proposal. We are not relying on it at this point. When we give this same presentation next year, I believe I'll be able to give more definitive answers on whether or not we would be able to rely on these impacts. The first impact is that if we regionalize, of course, we will have an asset transfer true-up calculation where producers and those who have invested in Des Moines Water Works system would receive value for their prior investments. And so producers like Des Moines Water Works, in that calculation, you might recall, we are estimated, not final, but estimated to receive about $50 million for our surplus capacity and the use of our assets. That $50 million additional funding has not been considered in what I have laid out. So if that does come to fruition, that is an additional funding stream that we could use to reduce any rate impacts for our Des Moines Inside City customers. We could complete more projects. So we'll be able to prioritize that if and when CIWW materializes. Another positive impact of regionalization that we haven't considered and what I presented is that under regionalization, Des Moines Water Works wouldn't be responsible for financing initially all of this, all of these improvements outside of what we're already considering the region will participate in related to the expansion. But there are, you know, many more dollars for projects that Des Moines Water Works will be responsible for financing outside of that expansion. And so under CIWW, the region itself would be responsible for financing capital improvements. And then Des Moines Water Works would only pay 40% or whatever our share is. I'm estimating it here today at 40%. As opposed to the status quo, which would be we're financing 100% of it and then recovering those costs through rates over time. So I believe that that is a more regionalization provides a more equitable cost sharing opportunity for those capital improvements. But again, what we've done assumes worst case scenario that we don't regionalize. Just wrapping up what Mike and I have shared, the CIP is $362 million over the next 5 years. You heard Mike say that the timing for those high priority projects like the expansion shouldn't be relaxed. That's pretty clear to us. And in fact, they've been expedited in this 5 years CIP. We're proposing that the capital funding be a combination of regional participation, namely for the expansion and, you know, about $14 million of joint projects, water rate revenue, which will result in water rate increases of about 5 to 10% year over year in the five-year period, and then debt. At its highest level, at the end of the 5 years, debt would be at about $85 million. Which would be just a little over $5 million in annual debt service. But this CIP, we agree, staff does anyway, that it's pretty aggressive, but it's necessary because we need to be able to continue providing quality water to our customers and the growing demand in the region. So I believe this CIP will move us in that direction. Before I open it up to questions, Ted and Mike both alluded to this, but you know there has been a lot of work that has gone into the CIP. Of course, engineering staff plays probably the heaviest role, but also in finance, Michelle Holland kind of shepherds us through the process, and then Donna Heckman did several cost and rate implication scenarios, so couldn't have done it without them. Questions. I see Joel joined us as well.
Hello, joining late, so I don't have a lot of great questions, but I appreciate your thorough presentation.
Yeah, I asked my questions along the way. I guess I'll ask, since we're here and we're together where we are on the 28E in response to that, since so much of this is, we need to understand which of those canoes we're in.
Yeah, you're asking what the status of the 28E is?
Yeah.
You know, we've received comments from probably half of the communities. We're still working with a couple of them. three specifically, Grimes, Altoona, and Bondurant, to get meetings scheduled with them and answer questions that they have about the agreement. West Des Moines and Urbandale, I know, have hired outside counsel to review. We heard yesterday that they've had one meeting with their outside counsel, and they have another one scheduled on the 20th of June. So we're not anticipating comments from them before the end of the month, which is later than we had hoped, but we really need their comments before we can move much further down the road. We did have a conversation with them yesterday about this letter that we're going to send this week, proposing a methodology for allocating capacity in the Sailorville expansion. And they were open-minded to that and felt that that was appropriate to move forward with that on a parallel path. So we are continuing to move forward, but frankly, right now we're just in a holding pattern waiting to get their comments.
So does that change the timeline that we had?
I'm afraid we're getting close to a change in the timeline. I think if we got comments by the end of this month, we might be able to move forward.
Because were we looking at getting it signed by September? Was that the...
We were hoping to have a final draft ready by September so that people could start beginning to sign it. We're not going to make that. I just don't see any way if we don't get their comments until the beginning of July. You know, we'll be working on a revised draft. They did share that they're not just planning to submit comments, but they're planning to submit recommendations on how some of their questions, comments, concerns could be addressed in the language. That may be helpful if we're supportive of their mm-hmm. suggested changes. But, mm-hmm. You know, the comments that we've gotten from the other communities, I think we could pretty effectively incorporate and stay on the same timeline. But just based on the length of time it's taking for Urbandale and West Des Moines to review, I guess I'm expecting their comments to be more significant. And I suspect that will take us more time to assimilate or evaluate or incorporate into the 2080. So if I am being realistic, I think that September date is certainly going to slip. It might be later in the year before we have a final draft. And then I think it's that will make it difficult to get signatures by the end of the year, but that's still our target.
Yeah. Ted, one thing I could add, if I may, is although we haven't heard West Des Moines and Urbandale's official or formal comments on the 2080, we are meeting with them to talk about some detailed questions and work through some of the details of the 2080 that, you know, just operationally or, you know, kind of just work through some ambiguities, I guess I would call them. So I think that those, we're not waiting for the formal comments. We're still, you know, plowing through some of that, which I think will help us move faster once we get the formal comments.
Agreed.
Okay, I think you all know that if there's anything that any of the rest of us can do, you only need to ask, so.
Yeah, I don't know that there's anything that can be done right now. Continued encouragement for timely review and response of the agreements, I think is where we're at, but I think that message has been delivered.
Okay, all right.
Diane, I have a couple of things that I would share in CEO comments, if I might.
Sure.
First, I just want to provide the board an update on the flooding situation here. We do currently have the Raccoon River slightly above flood stage, and I mean just a couple of inches right now. It was probably 6 or 8 inches above flood stage earlier today, but it's actually started to recede, which is good news. But the river got high enough that George Flagg Parkway had to be closed, and the back of the park had to be closed because water was actually over the roads. So the first time we've seen high water in 3 or 4 years, but it's good to see some water in the river. The flows in the river have been have also brought us some high nitrates, higher than we've seen in recent years. We saw some fairly high numbers on the Raccoon River, well above the drinking water standard, which is 10. We've seen numbers 12, 13, 14 milligrams per liter. The recent rains and the high water levels have diluted that. So it's the levels are down below 10, but the high water levels in the river are also influencing nitrate concentrations in the gallery. So when the river level goes up, that causes the river and the quality of water in the river to have more influence on our gallery. The nitrate concentrations in the gallery were measured today at above 9 milligrams per liter. So our raw water blend was above 9 milligrams per liter, which was a trigger to turn on the nitrate removal facility around noon today for the first time since I think 2017 was the last year that we actually ran the facility to remove nitrate. So the facility is on. This may be very short-lived. It might just be a day or two. So we're gonna kind of just hold off on saying too much about that, but the facility is running as we speak. And the other thing that we're seeing is microcystin concentrations in the Des Moines River are starting to increase. Same thing happened in June of last year. Same thing has happened many years here in recent history. Still manageable, the process is still handling. We are using some Des Moines River water, but the process is still removing it. But something we need to keep an eye on. So our typical water quality challenges are challenging again this spring, but thus far they're manageable and the staff is taking care of it. Nathan Casey and his folks are dealing with that pretty effectively, but we're into that time of year where we have to keep an eye on things pretty closely. It's an hour by hour decision, which sources we're going to use and which processes we're going to use to ensure that we can meet all of the drinking water standards.
Okay, is that it?
Yeah, the only other item on the agenda would be public comment, and I don't see any public. So I think that is it.
All right, then we will stand adjourned. Thanks so much.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks all.
Bye.